From Olympic sailing medalist to beating Ireland's best cyclists, meet the trailblazing athlete, Annelies Murphy. Annelies made history by winning a silver medal at the 2016 Rio Olympics, becoming the first Irish woman to ever achieve an Olympic medal in sailing. After three Olympic Games, Annelies decided to retire from competitive sailing following Tokyo. This year, however, she won the scratch race at the Dublin Track Cycling International Competition, just 2 months after embarking on her competitive cycling journey. She's continued to dominate the cycling scene, winning a gold and bronze at the recent national championships. Beyond her athleticism, Annelies is deeply committed to athlete welfare and is actively engaged in mentoring young talents. It's clear that the public has yet to witness the full extent of her potential in cycling, but one thing's for sure, Annelies Murphy continues to redefine the boundaries of what's possible in the world of sports. Here are the unexpected moments that have shaped her incredible journey. Let's get into it.
Annelies, we are just so excited to have you in studio with us and really honored to be chatting with you. So yeah, really looking forward to it. Hope you are too.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's great to be in here. And I'll hopefully, I don't know, say something useful and not just be rambling away, which is my normal style in life.
Okay. No, but that's great. We're here to hear your story. So looking forward to it. Okay, but just to start off, this has become my new favorite question. If you were to open your fridge and pick one item from your fridge, which item do you think would best describe you?
Oh, that is a difficult one. Well, I eat a lot of Greek yogurt, the full fat style stuff.
Mm. Okay.
I don't know, I just find it's really delicious and keeps me full for a long time. I don't know if that describes who I am as a person.
We'll go with that one then.
But it's probably, I have it every single day. So it's, and I'm just like, it's my favorite breakfast. So puts me in a good mood for the rest of the day.
Okay, lovely. And then if you could visit any country in the world, which country would you want to visit?
It's a difficult one. I've got to go to so many different countries. And I think it's amazing getting to see like different cultures and how different people live. And one of the really great things about sort of my Olympic sailing career was I wasn't going there as a tourist. I was actually going to a lot of cities and kind of living like a normal person, you know, going to get my groceries, like finding out where to get the like nice local coffee. Like in Brazil, I was spent so much time training before Rio. I even had a hairdresser out there. She was called Patricia. I'm still keeping contact with her, actually.
Oh, lovely.
So, I think it's like I would love to go to Argentina and Patagonia. I've never actually been. But then places I loved Brazil, like the people were so welcoming. Like I think sometimes, you know, from the outside, like the first time that I went there, people were like, oh, it's really dangerous going to Brazil. And I was kind of worried. And then I went there and I was just like, of course, it is dangerous. But like every city in the world, you know, is dangerous if you go to the wrong places. But like the people were so welcoming, like they only wanted to have a good time. And the weather is really nice as well. But then all of the places I've been in the world, I still, whenever I come back home, I'm still happy to be Irish and live in Ireland. Like it's great getting to go and visit all these other places, but then there's nowhere like home.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, sort of you mentioned it as well, the coffee thing. Yeah, what is your go-to coffee order?
Yeah, so I am a little bit obsessed with coffee.
Who isn't?
Not obsessed. I've actually, like, I now only have two a day. There was a while there during COVID where I was like, what will I do with myself now? I know, I'll have another coffee. So I have an espresso machine. So okay. I really like flat whites, but like not too milky, probably like a 6 ounce one. Is my idea of like a perfect coffee. I'm like trying to get good at making swans in my latte art, but they kind of look like angry dragons. not like it's like I'm like it's kind of a swan if you know you squint your eyes and tilt your head sideways.
Use your imagination.
Yeah, but love coffee, and I think I like the whole like culture of coffee as well. Like it's so great, you get to go and meet people and have a cup of coffee and have a chat. And lots of my really good sailing friends are really into coffee as well. So you know, when you go, we'd go to a new city, you'd be trying to find a nice coffee shop where you could go and have a coffee. So it's a great way to kind of bring people together.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Okay, so you send some photos to me.
Yeah.
So basically what I'm going to do is I'll show you the photo and then you will just explain the story behind the photo.
Okay.
So this is the first one that we got up here.
Yeah, so that is me. I'm pretty young in my Optimist. The Optimist class is for kids under 15. So it's a very small boat. You can be really small and sail it. Most kids around the world, it would be the first boat that they learn how to sail in. And I got my first boat in, I think it was 2009. I was 9 years old. And I was so excited. I'd sailed lots with my mum and dad. My mum actually went to the Olympics in sailing in 1988. So we did a lot of sailing as a family when we were kids, but it was so exciting getting my own boat. And I headed out. I'd done a lot of sailing on Blessington Lake, but I was actually, this is my first time kind of going out by myself on the Irish Sea and in Dunleary Harbour. And the sailing instructors, I think they presumed that I had like a better skill level than I did because they were like, oh, she's been sailing loads. But I'd never actually sailed a boat on my own. And I like sank two wooden mirrors in my first 2 weeks of learning to sail accidentally, but still. But I just loved it. And yeah, that was... the only problem was I was so tall when I was younger that I actually outgrew the boat quite quickly. So I was only in the Optimist until I was 12. And then I moved into the Laser 4.7, which is the smaller version of the boat I ended up going to the Olympics in. So I didn't get as long a Optimist career as I probably would have liked because all my friends were still in it. But when you're like, I was probably like 5'10" when I was 12 years old. So I just got too big for it.
And then, so you mentioned, yeah, your mom was also a sailor. Growing up, did you play any other sports as well? Or was sailing always like, was sailing one of the first?
Yeah. So I sailed loads with mom and dad, but I actually did quite a lot of horse riding. My mom, she was actually born in Mexico. My grandparents were Irish and English, but she grew up there. And she went, her dad brought her to watch the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City, like where they lived. And he introduced her to the entire Irish equitation team there in the Olympics. And like as a 10-year-old, she was like, I want to go to the Olympics in horse riding. But her dad died when she was 14. So they moved back to Ireland. And she ended up getting into sailing rather than sticking with horse riding. So when we were younger, we did quite a lot of horse riding. And I loved it. I actually wanted to go to the Olympics in three-day eventing, although I'd no idea of the implications of like actually owning a horse and all that kind of. I had a great pony and I had like great years horse riding. And it probably is one of the reasons why I ended up having a better sailing career was because I wasn't even taking sailing that seriously until I was probably 14 or 15. Well, because I had other sports, but then outside of those two sports, I was also like, I just loved being involved in sports. I loved playing hockey in school. I loved playing tennis. I loved cross country running, like pretty much any sport there was, I wanted to try and do it. Now I wasn't amazing at it because I'm not really fast. I don't have much fast twitch. So like hockey, I never had the speed to run up and down. I'd always have to be like a sweeper or a back. And then, I guess my like hand-eye coordination was like okay, but it wasn't amazing. So there was all these sports that like I loved doing, but I was like, God, why am I not that good at them? But then you make so many friends doing team sports as well, which I think is really important.
Yeah, that is true. And then how old were you when you started competing?
So in sailing, like you kind of start competing nearly straight away, but in very small regattas. So my first regatta was in Dunleary Harbour, and I was 9, and it felt like there was loads of boats and it was a really big deal, but it was actually very small. And then I guess my first sort of international event was the Mirror Europeans. It was a 2-person boat and I sailed with one of my friends, Karina Levins, and that was down in Loch Derg in Drumminier. So it was great. There was, I think, like 140 people competing, or 140 boats competing. So whatever, 280 people competing. And getting to be on a start line with so many boats was really great. And that was my first sort of experience of like international competition. But luckily I got to experience it at home, which is great. You know, getting to experience like racing against people from different countries while you're at home.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we'll move on to the next photo now. So what's the story behind this one?
So this photo here, that's actually, I'm sailing with my sister, Claudine. And we're sailing in a boat called the Water Wag. It's actually my mum's boat. So like one of the really great things about sailing is it's like a family sport. You're doing it for your entire life. You know, when you're younger, you can sail faster, more exciting boats. And then as you get older, you can like find a boat that's a little bit slower and less sort of physically demanding. So we raced against my mum and dad. My mum and dad have sailed together for, I don't know, the last probably 40 years. You know, it's like a kind of battle between the two of them. But I love going sailing with my sister. Like she actually, like when we were like younger, when we were racing, like she was better than me starting off. And like, it was terrible for her because I just was like, okay, I'm just going to try and beat Claudine at everything I do. And I just like slowly ground her down when I was a teenager. And like she always says, like the hardest thing in her life was like realizing I was going to be better than her at sailing and like being able to accept that. But then like she became my biggest supporter when I was like sort of gearing up to the London Olympics and Rio and Tokyo. Like I always had her in my corner. And it's one of the like best bits about it is like we can go out and we can sail in Dunleary on a Wednesday evening together and have a bit of a laugh. You know, we end up shouting at each other when we're sailing. We'll be like fighting around the race course, but then like we come in and we're laughing about it. Or it's also great like racing against our parents, like trying to beat them. It's so yeah, it's just, I think it's something that probably very few sports gives you, that you're able to go and sail with your family members and, you know, just have a laugh and really enjoy it.
And do you think also with your parents' sailing background that you also had that desire from very young to also want to get to the Olympics, or not really?
I think probably I was extremely aware of the Olympics from a very young age, like, which is maybe different to someone who isn't from, doesn't have a sporting parents. Like they might, you know, have a bit of interest in the Olympics, but I knew everything about the Olympics from when I was really young. I used to talk about how mum went to the Olympics, and you know, my mum and dad, they like, I think they half thought they were going to maybe try and go, they were going to go together to another Olympics, sailing together. But then my brother was born and that kind of put all plans out the window. But it was, you know, that was always in the background. And like, it's, I guess it's something that's like not mentioned that much in Irish sport anymore. But like as a 6 year old, my mum was making me stay up to watch Michelle Smith win her Olympic medals in swimming. And like that was my first experience of like being really excited about watching an Irish athlete. I would have been, had just turned 6, and you're watching an Irish athlete and you're so excited, and I knew all about it. And then I guess the Sydney Olympics, that was when I really started to be aware of, I would have been 10 then. So Sonia O'Sullivan winning her silver medal. And then also watching all the sailors, like a couple of the Irish sailors were, you know, kind of poised to do really well. Maria Coleman and David Burrows like had chances to win medals in the Sydney Olympics. So like it was, you know, you're suddenly getting more and more into it. So like that's something that I guess like I've always looked back at my mum, like without even knowing it, I had this like role model who was just sitting there in my house. So I never actually, it was probably wasn't until I was 16 or 17 that I started to think like, oh, maybe I could get to the Olympics in sailing. Like up until then, I was just like, it seemed so far away from something that I'd be capable of doing. Like I was like, oh, I could never get to that standard. And then as I got older, I started to improve quite a lot. I improved quickly over like a short period of time, probably over 3 years, I got like much better very quickly. And, you know, then it starts to become a little bit more of a reality. It goes from like, you know, maybe I could think about going to the 2016 Olympics to in 2009, I had a really good first season as a senior. And I was like, suddenly I was like, not only could I maybe get to the London Olympics, it's like I could get to the London Olympics and be in the top 10. Like it's it's amazing sometimes how in sport, you know, things can snowball, and when you start getting a bit of confidence in yourself, you know, you get you start getting better quickly.
And I was just thinking of it now as well. So like, I'm someone who doesn't know much about sailing. So if you were to explain to someone how a normal competition would work for sailing, how would you go about doing that?
It is a very complicated sport. Sometimes I'm watching it myself, I'm like, we really need to simplify this for the average public. So something that sailing is, I guess it's quite similar to golf. So golf is will be run over 4 days. And it's the person who's the most consistent over those 4 days, you know, getting, it's a, basically a low score competition. So whoever finishes in the lowest score wins. And sailing is similar. We normally run our events over 5 or 6 days. And it's the same thing. It's also so that you probably get a variety of conditions, that it's not just someone who goes out and has one really good day, because there's so much tactics and strategy. Mm. It's someone who's able to perform well over a week long competition with different weather conditions and, you know, different variables thrown at them. So what sailing normally is your first 5 days, you do 2 1-hour races a day. And then on your final day, the top 10 do a medal race. And that was just designed for sort of TV, for the Olympics, to make things more exciting. So the top 10 do a final race, but they count all of their previous 10 races going into that final race. It's just to add a bit of extra sort of excitement and pressure on the actual event. But it's like a long event. And if it's light winds, it's actually not too physically demanding. It's more just mentally demanding. And then, but if it's windy, it's like really physically demanding and also mentally demanding. So it's really important, like the importance of being like really, really fit and really strong. Like, it's not just to sail the boat well, but it's also so you can still make good decisions when you're really tired. And that's something that, like, probably I had an advantage of over my competitors. I took, like, my fitness training really seriously. And it meant when, like, I was starting to get really tired, I was actually still able to make good decisions because I had the fitness to kind of do that. And that's sailing. At the end of the day, it is, like, a game of strategy. And it's you know, you can do all the training in the world you want, but if you don't make good sort of tactical decisions, you're not going to do well.
And do you think that that is maybe also a misconception that people might have about sailing, is that it is such a strategic sport?
Yeah, I think it's because it's hard to understand when you haven't done it. But basically what you're trying to do is you can't just sail straight into the wind. That doesn't work. So you have to sail at angles to the wind. So the wind is coming, even though it might be coming from the southwest, which is what it nearly always is in Dublin, it's not actually coming directly from the southwest. It changes around all the time, just little bits, but it means you're always trying to be on the right sort of, it's called the right tack, the right shift of those that wind. So you sort of sail a shorter course than your competitors. And then also, like, wind isn't consistent. It isn't just the same across the entire course. There'll be places where there'll be stronger bits of wind and lighter bits of wind. So you're always trying to look up the course. And you can actually, if you go down to the sea, you can look out to the sea and you'll actually be able to see darker patches of water and lighter patches of water. And that's like differences in wind. And that's something that you have to, like, learn throughout the years. And then you also have to deal with, like, large numbers of competitors. Like, at world championships, you're racing against 120 competitors. So you're not only dealing with the wind and the waves and the clouds, you're also dealing with like 119 other boats that also have their own agenda. And you know, you have to keep out of people's way, and there's lots of rules about how you avoid boats and who has right of way. So it makes it really interesting. No day is ever the same. You know, there's always a lot going on. And when everything's going right for you, it's like the most fun sport in the world. But when things are going wrong, it's the most frustrating sport in the world.
Okay, no, that is super interesting. Thanks for sharing that. I don't know if I'd give sailing a try, but definitely is interesting though. I never knew all those things about it. So yeah, we'll move on to the next photo, which is this one.
Yeah.
So what's the story behind it?
So that's, I'm doing the Volvo Ocean Race. So I completed the Volvo Ocean Race in the race, it was the 2017-2018 edition. So we started in Alicante in October 2017, and we finished in The Hague in June 2018. So it was like a 9 month long race around the world. And I got to race on a team, a 50-50 team. It was five men and five women. And we were racing for the Clean Seas campaign, the United Nations Clean Seas campaign. Our boat was called Turn the Tide on Plastic. So not only it was racing around the world, but also having like a really good message about like the problem with plastic pollution, particularly in the ocean, how much plastic is in the ocean. And it was, that's probably the most challenging thing I've ever had to do, ever done in my life, is racing around the world. It was the most, it wasn't even physically, it was actually, it was hard, but mentally I've never experienced any kind of a sort of, I guess, levels of wanting to quit something so much in my life. Like I would daydream about quitting. Like it was, it was so, so tough at times. You do these shifts, you do 4 hours on, 4 hours off. So you, when you're your 4 hours on, you're either trimming the sails or you're steering the boat. And then on your 4 hours off, you're eating, you're brushing your teeth. you're trying to get as much sleep as you can into that period. But if you need to do a sail change or a maneuver, you have to get out of bed, get all into all of your gear, up on deck, do the maneuver, do the sail change, and then you can go back to bed again. So like you wouldn't that often actually get those full sort of 4 hours off. You know, if you were lucky, you'd get 2 hours of sleep in those 4 hours. So you get like sleep deprived. And but it was also like one of the most sort of, I guess, proudest moments I had when I actually finished the race in The Hague after like 9 months of racing around the world, getting to go to like the most amazing places, see the most amazing sunrises, sunsets, you know, whales, dolphins, albatrosses. You kind of got to see everything. But then actually getting to the finish line and being like, I got through it, I didn't quit. And I think I like had a really good attitude for the whole thing. I tried to, even when I felt like that this was the worst thing that's like worst in the world, I never tried to let my teammates know that I was like struggling too much. I was like, you know, I need to be a really good team player, try and do the best job I can on the boat and kind of get through it. So I have huge respect. Like some people have done the race 8 times and I have so much respect for them. But it was a pretty special race because the race organizers brought in a rule that you had to have women on the boat. And there was like some of the men were annoyed about this, but it was a huge rule change and it gave really good female sailors a chance to compete at the top level of the professional sport in sailing, which was, you know, a really big deal. So every boat you could sail around the world with 7 men, or you could sail around the world with 7 men and 2 women. So every boat went and recruited 2 women. Mm. And then our boat, we actually chose for the 5 and 5 option. So we got 1 extra crew member, which makes a huge difference as well. Like it's having 10 crew members is really good because there's so many jobs on the boat, so much lifting and physical work, like having that extra person made a big difference. So it was the first time that like a female won the race. Because the team of Dongfeng won and they had 2 women on the boat. And it's like, you know, it's a really good thing for sport and particularly at a professional level. You know, the top female sailors were getting paid as well as the top male sailors, which is a really big deal. Like, in, it's not many sports where women can compete with men. Yeah. Not, you know, maybe there's leagues where, you know, I know we're trying to get to a stage where women are going to get paid somewhat similar amounts to their male counterparts, but actually in sailing it's one of the few sports where women can compete at the same level as men and race against them.
Which I'm sure not many people might know that as well. And even like thinking of Ireland specifically, and you've been in sailing for pretty much most of your life, so would you say that there's actually generally a big interest in female sailors involved in the sport, or is it still mainly male dominated?
There's at like underage level, they probably like particularly young girls, they're actually probably better than young boys because they mature faster. They're smarter. They're better at making decisions, not getting like annoyed. So quite often you'll have at like a sort of under 15 level, you know, the group of girls will be actually much better than the group of boys. But then it's trying to encourage them to stay in sport, which is that's the difficult bit. I think we are lucky in Ireland that we have some fantastic young sailors coming up through the system, particularly female sailors. We've got Eve McMahon in the Ilka 6, the boat that I went to the three Olympics in. I know she's only 19 and like she's a like a young superstar. She was, you know, youth world champion, youth European champion, you know, won everything she could at an under 18 level. And now she's like moved up into the senior ranks. And, you know, she's going to have a big year ahead of her with Paris Olympics coming up. But, you know, it's really exciting. She's young, she's really hungry, and she wants to compete. And then we have quite a few girls in the 49er FX, which is the women's Olympic skiff. So they're two person boats. And then in the 29er class, we had Lucy and Alana were European champions, and the O'Riordan sisters were second at the World Championships. And then Clementine Van Steenberg won the World Championships with her brother. So there's lots of young female sailors coming through that are like hungry to try and achieve at like a really high level internationally, which is, it's really exciting to see. And I'm like, I want them all to do well. I'm like, and I'm also like, I'm like, just go and go Olympic sailing. Don't worry about life. You'll figure that out later on.
That's super exciting. Yeah. Okay. So we'll move on to the next photo, which is this one over here.
Yeah. So that's, it was the third day of racing in the Rio Olympics. It was really windy and wavy, and like those were conditions that like I loved. I always wanted to get those conditions when I was racing. I just loved the physical aspect of like having to throw the boat around and having to be like really skilled at sailing the boat well when it was windy. And at Olympics, I didn't seem to get many of those days, but that was one of the days I actually didn't probably do as well as I should have on that day, but it was just a day that was like really fun. Getting to surf down big waves, it put me in a position going into the second half of the Olympic regatta where, you know, if I had a couple more good races, I was going to be in with a good chance of getting a medal. So it was just a day that I'll always remember as being a lot of fun, and it's probably, you know, it was probably something that stopped me doing well sometimes in my career, was always wanting those windy days with big waves. And you don't get them that often. But it was also, it's like, they're really good memories, those days where it was, you just knew you were able to sail the boat better than lots of other people.
And just to go back a little bit as well. So when you went to your first games, first of all, do you remember how you felt when you found out you were going? And then secondly, what was the experience like? I think everyone who's on the outside would just love to know, what is it like to call yourself an Olympic athlete?
Yeah. So the London Olympics, my first opportunity to qualify was the World Championships. They were in Perth in December 2011. And I actually ended up having like a fantastic first 2 days. That meant that I was coming second overall at the midway point of the regatta. And at that point, they then split the fleets in half. So there's the top half and then the bottom half. So once you get to that point, the worst you can do is, you know, basically halfway down the fleet. So at that point, I knew I'd qualified Ireland for a place at the Olympics after my first 2 days of racing, which was like pretty exciting. But then also I was in like a silver medal position at that stage. So I ended up having a really good rest of those World Championships. I think I won 4 races there at the World Championships. Like I knew I was good at winning races at a young age, which was like, I love that feeling of race winning. And And then I'd qualified the country for the Olympics. We had the last race. I ended up actually finishing sixth overall at the World Championships. So I was a bit disappointed because I was in a bronze medal position at one point during the final race. But then I was cycling after like finishing and like packing my boat up and everything. I was cycling home and like stupidly I had a bag with all of my like ropes and sailing gear on my handlebars of my bike. Oh. And they blew into the front wheel.
Oh gosh.
And I went over the handlebars and I like landed on my face and I broke my teeth. So then I was just like, I remember trying to find a dentist in Western Australia on a Sunday afternoon. It's like nearly impossible and my teeth were all wonky. So like my first experience of like initially like really happy that I'd like qualified for the Olympics, and then I was there like with like half my teeth missing trying to find a dentist. I was like, oh god. But I'd had like a really successful 2011 season. I'd been top 10 at every single event. I'd won medals in quite a lot of events. I'd been a bronze medalist at the World Cup event in the Olympic venue, so I knew I could perform well. And then I just went into 2012 and there was all this like pressure of like pressure I'd put on myself that like to win a medal. And I had such high expectations of myself. I was like, if I wasn't in the top five, I was like, what am I doing here? And I ended up having a complete disastrous event out in Mallorca at the World Cup event in March. I finished like 72nd and maybe even 73rd actually. And I remember just realizing, I was like, I actually quit in one race. And it was the only time that I, like, since then I've never quit another race. Like, I was just like, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. If you want to perform at a high level, but I quit. And I was like really annoyed with myself. And I was like, I can't go out and quit when things are going badly. So I was able to like take a step back and take a lot of the pressure I'd put on myself off and kind of go back to basics and just really start working on like technique and speed and how to get better in the boat. And I ended up then having a really good period of training the whole way up through to the London Olympics. And I was third at the World Cup event in Weymouth just before the Olympics. And then I was seventh at the European Championships in kind of a light wind event, which wouldn't have been one of my strengths, but that seventh place gave me loads of confidence going into the Olympics of, even if it's light winds, I can still do well here. And then like it came to the actual Olympics and it was so exciting. Like, you know, you got all your Olympic gear. I'd actually rented a house in Weymouth for 6 months, which was where the sailing was. So I stayed in my house because they did have a sailing Olympic village, but I was so comfortable in my own house with my own stuff that, you know, I had my washing machine. I was able to wash my wetsuit after sailing and hang it up, and you know, everything was kind of there for me. While being in, you know, the Olympic village, I wouldn't have had all of that. But we got to go up then to actually for the opening ceremony. We like drove up to London, which was a terrible idea because we got lost. And then we ended up having to park basically halfway between Weymouth and London and get loads of trains in anyway. But the opening ceremony in London was amazing. Like getting to walk into the Olympic Stadium and meet all the other Irish athletes. And we had Jamaica just in front of us. So Usain Bolt was there and he was being such a showman, you know, just like there was so much excitement about it. And then I got the train from London back to Weymouth the next day and then was just starting to prepare for the Olympics. So it was like I got, I think, a really good experience of it. Obviously, like the London Olympics, I sailed really, really well at them. I made mistakes, but in sailing and in sport, everyone makes mistakes, you know. It ends up being a competition of like who can make the least mistakes. And I won the first four races, which hadn't been done before at an Olympics in sailing, because it isn't the kind of sport where you win loads of races. It's actually, you know, generally it's the person who wins overall might win one race and they'll have, you know, lots of races in the top five. It's a game of consistency. And I ended up, you know, my kind of worst nightmare of I went into the final race, the medal race, and I was so afraid to tell anyone that I was afraid of finishing fourth, but that was all I could think about. And I went out and I sailed like someone who wanted to finish fourth. So I finished fourth, but I still look back on it and I see, like, you know, I could have done differently, but it was still, I still had an incredible experience. Mm. I performed really well. Obviously, at the like high pressure moment, I didn't perform how I wanted to. But then the lessons I learned from finishing fourth in London, they were what kind of drove me to, you know, do lots of sort of hard thinking and get lots of people to come and help me and work through the next 4 years, so that when I ended up in a similar situation in Rio, I knew how to deal with that kind of pressure. Mm. And I was able to go out and perform well and win a medal. And maybe if in London I just, you know, it had all kind of gone smoothly and I had won a medal, I might have actually not done the, you know, the hard stuff I had to win a medal in Rio. Or I might have just had like loads of confidence and had like a really great career. I'm never too sure, you know? But it was a great experience. Like, it was, and getting to go as a 22-year-old, like, everything is just so exciting and fun. Yeah.
And then becoming Ireland's first ever sailing medal, Olympic medalist. What was that like?
So we actually had a silver medal from the Moscow Olympics. Men won a silver medal in the 1980 Olympics, but I was the first female Olympic medal. Which was, I guess, it's a thing that I think is really important, that I've shown that it's possible. There's like this whole generation now below me that like, they know that it's achievable, it's something you can do. Mm. Up until that point, we had lots of like amazing sailors at the Olympics, but you know, our best results were sort of, you know, in sort of around 10th, or we had, you know, a couple just inside the top 10, but there was no one had ever really been able to challenge for a medal. So to be a medalist, you know, I think what it shows is it is possible, and we have a really good country to learn to sail in. We get such a great variety of conditions. There's actually loads of places to sail in Ireland. There's lots of competition, which when you're young, you know, getting to compete against, you know, race against lots of kids is what makes you better. So I think we have a really good system in place, and then showing that it's possible is really good for the next generation.
Mm, yeah. And I can imagine also for you, it must have been, I don't want to say relief, but like all those long, hard years of just putting in that work and then being able to get that medal. It must have been such a surreal feeling.
Yeah. It actually was relief. I like about a little bit over halfway through the race, the final race, the medal race, I knew I was guaranteed at least a silver medal. I was actually in gold medal position at that point. But I ended up making a few mistakes that was what put me into silver in the end. But like, I had such a huge sense of relief, because even though I'd gone out onto that last day knowing I'm not afraid of finishing fourth, if I finish fourth, it's going to be horrible. But like, don't go out with that fear of, you know, this is going to be the worst thing in the world. If I go out and race my best, and three girls race better than me, then that's fine. But you know, you're going to be sad, but you're going to be able to get over it. The worst thing you could go out and do is, you know, go out and basically freeze and panic and not race well, and you know, kind of give away the medal. So crossing the finish line, like, I was just like so relieved that that I hadn't finished fourth, and that it all been worth it. And then, like, I guess all the people that had helped me, like my whole family were there on the beach in Rio going wild, my coach, my sports psychologist, my physio, my teammates, you know, they'd all been there like for, you know, the last 8 years. And well, my family were there for my whole life, but I'd had like, it was really great to like, I guess, pay them back as well. I felt like, and then also I think like lots of people, like family, friends, and you know, businesses and people had like supported me over the years, and like I felt kind of relieved that I was able to like pay them back as well with like the Olympic medal. Like, it was like, it's nearly like you backed a good horse, and because it's as like when you're young and you're trying to go to the Olympics, you need to fundraise, you need to, you know, raise money to be able to go and compete at these events all over the world and to get equipment and, you know, to be able to get good coaching and good strength and conditioning and everything like that. And, you know, like people, obviously, when they give you money to help you, they're not, they just want you to go and do your best. They don't expect anything back. But as a young person, you feel like, you know, you need to try and do sort of, you know, some justice to people believing in you. And that was probably, you know, the best bit. And coming home and having this huge party. We had a big party, my yacht club, the National Yacht Club in Dunleary. They had like a huge stage, and like everyone still goes on about it being the best party they ever went to in the club over the years. I just remember having to shake hands with about 5,000 people. But yeah, I think that's the thing. And that's what sport is, isn't it? It gives people so much joy, like getting to watch it and getting to see it. And I think like Irish people really appreciate you know, Irish sport doing well in whatever sport it is. We'll always get behind behind sports stars that are doing well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so you went to Tokyo as well, and then afterwards you decided to stop competing in sailing. So if you don't mind just talking through what led to that decision.
So I kind of always knew Tokyo was going to be my last Olympics. I'd had like an amazing career in sailing, but at the end of the day, it's not a profession. You're not getting paid to do it. Like I was really lucky that I had great, you know, great sponsors and great people supporting me. That meant that I was able to do it at a high level and, you know, pay for all my competitions and everything like that. But it wasn't a job. Like at the end of the day, I realized, oh, I'm going to have to figure out what else I want to do in my life. And also being a full-time athlete, it's like tough on your body, you know. Your body hurts all the time. You get to a point where you're like, actually, you know, do I want my body to keep on hurting? And I also, you know, I felt it was time, like there's a whole new generation of young sailors coming up, and I'm like, I want them to have their chance to try and go and do what I did, you know, get to go to Olympics, get to go and do really well. So I knew that Tokyo was gonna be my last games. I guess I didn't expect to have to wait another year before I'd actually compete. And I'd probably find that quite mentally tough, because I was really ready to perform well in Tokyo. And then COVID delayed it a year. And that was like a tough year getting through that. I've like never had any problem with like motivation for training, but it's like, I just sometimes felt like I didn't have the hunger when I'd get to racing that I had when I was younger. I just, you know, that like want to like win really badly, I sometimes felt like it was gone a bit, and that used to freak me out. I was like, this isn't a good thing. And that maybe happens, you know, you stop wanting, you know, it isn't suddenly everything is a competition and you have to win at everything, you know, your life starts to get a bit like less competitive. But yeah, Tokyo Olympics, I guess I didn't perform well, which was like really hard. I went out there. I expected that we were going to have a windy and wavy competition, which is the kind of the normal sort of weather for the summertime there in Enoshima, which is where the sailing was. But there's that print, the Great Wave of Kanagawa. It's that famous Japanese print with the big wave Mount Fuji in the background. So that's actually, Kanagawa is where the sailing was.
Okay.
So it's like, it's famous for having these big waves and wind. So I love wind and waves. So I prepared really well for it to be hopefully a windy and wavy regatta. But as like, I've probably noticed it over the last 10 years, like weather systems are a lot less predictable. And I guess that's just climate change.
Yeah.
And like, you really notice it as a sailor, because places where you'd go to where you should have predictable wind, predictable weather, you suddenly don't get that predictable stuff anymore. Like, you'll always get a day or two where it might not be the normal, but now quite often you might get a month where it's not the normal. And Tokyo was one of those times where they had quite unusual weather. Like, a lot of athletes, including myself, we prepared really well for the heat. I did a huge amount of heat training because we knew it was going to be hot and you want to like prepare your body so you can perform well in the heat. it actually wasn't that hot. And then, you know, we didn't have the wind that we thought we were going to have. And that just completely threw me off. And I probably had such high expectations. I wanted to go there and win a gold medal. And I went with that expectation. And when I started to realize I might be like going for a top five, I didn't know how to deal with that. Mm. And it's funny, like you think as a, like an older athlete that you figured it all out and you know how to deal with pressure and stress. But at the end of the day, like you don't, when you're in those really high pressure situations, you still revert to like your bad habits. And that was kind of what happened to me. And I kind of froze up on the first couple of days and had a really bad first 2 days, which I knew then like I had no chance of getting a medal. I ended up having a pretty good second half of the regatta, and the one windy and wavy day that we did have, I had a second and a first. And it was like, it was some consolation that I was like, well, I won races at all three Olympics I went to. Like I didn't win medals at all three, unfortunately, but and it was also, you know, that's also sport. You can go and you can think that you're really well prepared and you've done everything right. It doesn't always mean that you're going to get the result that you want. And it also made me realize, like, just because I felt like I deserved to do well and to win a medal didn't mean I was going to get what I deserved, you know, like life isn't like that. It doesn't just, you know, you can do everything, you can feel like you do everything right and you still won't get what you want. And, and yeah, and it was like sad, like doing my last race, like knowing that was going to be my last race sailing at the Olympics was, it was like an end of an era. My coach, Rory Fitzpatrick, he'd been coaching me since I was 15. So it was like 16 years of having Rory as a coach, which is like, it's a huge period of your life where someone like, you know, is invested in me performing and doing well as I was. So it was a sort of, you know, sad moment, like that I was sailing in and I was crying a bit, like because I hadn't performed well, and he was crying because he was like, I know, but like you have to look back at your entire career. Yeah. And I was just like, oh, I just didn't want, I guess you don't want it to end. Like I knew it was going to be my last event and I didn't want it to end like that. You know, you always want, I think every athlete wants to retire on a high, but probably 1% of athletes do get to retire on a high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we're moving on to the last photo now, which is this one.
Yeah.
So what's the story behind this photo?
So that's I'm doing the individual pursuit at the track national championships this summer, just about 4 weeks ago now. And I guess like everyone's always like, oh, you're doing great, how you've just got into cycling. But for like some background, I was like kind of cycled my whole life. Like I cycled to school and like when I was a teenager, I cycled to Dunleary to go training in sailing. And then sailing, particularly the laser, the boat that I sailed, it's, you need to be really fit and strong and have really good leg strength and endurance. So cycling was like the perfect complement for that. And then I also loved it because it was like something I could do where it's like, it's not tough on your joints, so you can do loads of it. You get outside. Sailing is in all these, you get to compete in all these great countries around the world, which also happen to be great to go cycling in. So you kind of get like the bonus of getting to cycle in different countries around the world. I actually cycled up Mount Fuji once, which was like one of the most best adventures I've done. I got a train and then cycled up, but it was, I was never allowed to compete when I was in cycling, when I was sailing, because you'd look a bit stupid if you were like, oh yeah, sorry, I'm actually injured because I fell off my bicycle in a race. But after the Tokyo Olympics, I kind of came back to Ireland and I was just like, I was feeling a bit disappointed. And I was like, for the first time, like I was really unmotivated to do anything. I was just kind of, I was like, oh, what am I going to do with myself? Like, I kind of felt like not getting out of bed, and which was like quite unusual for me because I spent so many years like having a goal where you got up and you went and you did your training. And, you know, even days where you didn't feel like doing, she still just went and did it. And then I was just like, didn't feel like doing anything. And I was following a girl, Kate Early, on Instagram, and she was putting up some stories about racing in crit racing out in Corky Park. So I sent her a message and I was like, what's the story? Like, do you think I could come next week? And she's like, definitely come. So I went to Cork Park and I did my first race, and they were like, have you done any racing before? And I was like, well, no, but like, I do quite a lot of cycling. And they were like, oh, you better start in like the first group. And I was just like, so you get like a 20-second head start. And I was like, I kind of felt like I was cheating because like, I know that I'm like very fast.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. So I headed off and I ended up just like racing around, and I won the race. So, and it was so much fun. Now it was like, I went way harder than I needed to. Like, I could have just won the race kind of, but I ended up like lapping the field. So it was like such a good buzz. And then I went back in a race the next week and I didn't get away with it so easily the next week. But I just was like, this is so much fun. And I started to race then last year. So sort of the season of 2022, I did quite a bit of racing. And then I joined a women's race team. We raced under Newcastle West Wheelers in Limerick. But and our hotel is, or our team is called Longcourt, a cycling team. So a girl, Autumn Collins, set up this women's race team, and I've got to race on the road for them. And then I started doing track stuff this year. So racing in Sundrive. I'd never actually done any track cycling before. I'd always wanted to give it a go, but I didn't even know how. Like, I was like, I don't even know how you get to the track. Like, how do you get onto the track? Like, what kind of bike do you need? All this kind of stuff. But Autumn very kindly like organized everything for me. She's like, here's a bike, here's this, and I just like absolutely loved it. So it's been like a really fun summer getting to race. And there is the sort of Dublin International GP was on in May, the end of May, and that was like my first time doing a track race. And the first race was the scratch race, and I didn't really know what was going on. Like, I'd been watching all the YouTube videos the night before to make sure I kind of knew the rules, but I had like no real idea what was going on. And then with like two laps to go, I was just kind of at the back, and I was like, I'm just gonna like go for it here and see if I can get a bit of a gap. And I ended up getting a gap on everyone, and like I won the race. And everyone was like, wow, you must have like really known your tactics there. Like, you went at the perfect time. And I'm just like, like, I had no idea what I was doing. But yeah, it was like, I guess like that feeling of getting to like compete. And also, I do like love the feeling of winning, which is like, I feel like it's a bit addictive. Like, when you like win something, you want to like try and win it again. And I'm also aware that you have to like work really hard to, you know, I feel like I train not at an Olympic athlete level, but I do train at like a high level in cycling, which gives me that like power to be able to do it. And then I also have, I guess, 15 years of training age where I've been like training at an elite level for 15 years. So it's just all those years have just like, they're behind me. That's what kind of gives me my sort of strength. But yeah, we had a great summer. We won the team pursuit national championships, and then I won the individual pursuit. I won the Madison with my friend Ellen, and I was third in the scratch race. So it was like a really kind of fun summer getting to race and have fun with it as well. Like, it's trying to. I think the good bit is like getting to do a sport where there's no pressure on me to perform well. Like, I want to perform well, but it's just doing it for like the love of sport and getting to compete, and particularly getting to compete with a team. Like, that's so much fun.
Yeah. So I remember also reading a couple of headlines. So here's one of them. Olympic sailing medalist Annelise Murphy takes cycling gold. And you just saw a bunch of those like circling around as well. Would you say as well that, if you think of all the sports that you've done, that they've all gone hand in hand in some way or another. They've taught you things which have contributed to the next sport that you were playing.
Yeah, definitely. I think probably when I was younger and I was into horse riding, it teaches you like the importance of like responsibility. Like, you're having to look after a pony, you know, you're having to be quite independent at a young age. And then when I got into sailing, you've got all the sort of tactics and strategy involved in sailing. And then, as sort of, I guess when you're a young sailor, you don't need like the fitness and everything. But then you start to realize as you get older how important like the fitness side of it is. And you like, and then that sort of independence I had from when I was very young meant that, like, as an 18-year-old, my sixth year holiday was taking my mum's car with the trailer with boats on it and going to Europe and competing at all the different events in Europe. Like, that was my idea of a sixth year holiday. And also, like, I guess having the confidence to like head off to Europe, like, with just like a map, like no GPS, no iPhones, no nothing. I don't think I even had a credit card. I think I had cash for everything. Oh, wow. And then like getting to the stage where then I got into cycling, and all of my years in sailing has like taught me how to train properly and how to recover. And then also like the importance of like fueling really well, like eating the right food so that, you know, you've got enough energy to train hard and to race hard, like all those kind of lessons. And then the cycling is like, there's no massive pressure. It's just purely for like the fun of it and getting to experience new sport and meet new people and sort of, you know, do something different.
Yeah, super exciting. And you are quite a passionate advocate for athlete welfare and helping to drive a mentoring initiative as well. So if you can maybe just talk a bit about that and what it is.
Yeah. So I'm on the Olympic Federation of Ireland's Athletes Commission, which has been brilliant. So first of all, getting to be sort of on a sort of team of like-minded athletes where we're trying to like help future athletes in, you know, not end up in situations that we ended up in, or that they get like the best possible support and the best possible help that they need. And I found like through my career, like I've had so many like mentors that I didn't even really realize were mentors, but that helped me through different periods where I was finding things difficult, or when I was not finding things difficult and people were, you know, helping guide me through that as well. So an idea was to set up a mentor program where sort of past Olympians that have had that experience, that have experienced the pressure of going to an Olympics, you know, knowing that they have to go and, you know, try and get a personal best performance, that they can help like future Olympians, you know, that they can help them chat through, you know, how it's going to feel and, you know, how you can sort of, I guess, mistakes you shouldn't make and things like that. But it's great to try and do something like this where it's also difficult because, you know, everyone's very busy and getting everyone the time to get it done. But it's, yeah, I think like mentoring and, you know, basically looking out for younger generations is so important. Like, I think if you can like give anyone like small amounts of advice, it like makes such a big difference. Like, throughout my sailing career, like so many people would just help me in small little ways. They probably didn't even realize that they helped me, but they really did. And that's the kind of idea behind it. But it's, you know, it's really important for, you know, athlete welfare as well. Like, it's a lonely life being an athlete, and, you know, you need people around that understand that and can help you through it, and, you know, guide you along the way. And I think also encourage you to go for it. Like, sometimes now I feel like oh, I don't know if I should have all my eggs in one basket. I'm like, well, if you want to go to the Olympics and perform at your best, you probably do have to have most of your eggs in a basket. You can maybe have like, you know, a few other things that you're doing, but like the reality is you're competing against people that, you know, if you want to try and compete against the best in the world, you're probably going to have to put everything into it and then find some kind of balance in your life so that you're able to deal with that. But it is a huge commitment, but then it's so worthwhile. It gives you so much back. I think being in sport, like, first of all, like as a woman, like, it gives you so much confidence believing that you can do things. So much independence, knowing I can just go and do this on my own. Like, I don't need anyone to help me do it, which is really important. Also, when you need help, it's important to ask for it as well. But, you know, having, I think sport gives you all these skills that then when you decide that you, you know, want to move on from being a high performance athlete, that you can use all those skills in whatever sort of career path you choose to take, whether that's in sport or business or whatever it is, you know, that it's all those skills that you'll have learnt, even though you might feel like you're missing out on your peers that are just, you know, going through life, you actually will catch up so quickly because sport has taught you so many lessons along the way.
Mm, yeah. And you have touched on it just now, but if you had to sum up why you would encourage other women and young girls to get involved in sport, what would you say?
I think the first thing I'd say is for like the fun of it. Mm. And I think it's really important to realize like there's so many different sports out there. Like one sport won't be right for everyone. You know, there's so many sports out there. Just because you haven't found the right sport doesn't mean that there isn't one out there that you're going to love. And then probably when you do find that sport, you'll love it, and like you'll nearly become part of like a tribe of people that are doing that sport, you know, and you'll realize, oh, this is what I love. And it's great for like making friends. Like sport is just, it's one of those things where you just, you know, you kind of go out and you can be pals with everyone, you kind of suffer together nearly, and you just, you have so much crack. It's a way of like going and having fun where it's also good for your body, good for your health. I think like I'm a huge believer that like being like active and fit is so good for like not only like your entire body, but also your like your mind. Like I feel like getting in some kind of exercise every day, and that doesn't have to be, you know, extreme exercise. That's getting out, moving your body, your brain just will like thank you for it. Like like I'm like, I know I need to get out and do something every day, or else I'm just, you know, thinking, overthinking things. And I think getting out and doing sport every day also helps you sleep better. It also probably makes you eat better, just because, you know, you're eating to fuel your sport rather than just, you know, for the sake of it. And then I think the confidence thing is huge. Like, you know, it gives you so much confidence, sport. It teaches you so many life lessons as well. Like sport is never going to make things easy for you. Like there's always going to be someone that's going to be better than you. There's always going to be someone coming up that's going to beat you. Like, and it teaches you to be okay with that. You know, like, okay, I'm not the best now, but I can see who the best is and how can I get better? Or, you know, I am the best, and then you lose and you have to accept like that you've lost. Like you realize like in life, you are going to lose lots of things in life. It's not going to be easy. But sport teaches you like it's okay to lose and like how you can get back on track. And I think, and then, yeah, just the friends that you make, like that's, I've said that already, but it's like, you know, all my best friends are involved in sport in some way or another. And I think you kind of mutually bond over it. Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope to see you again for the next episode. Be sure to subscribe to Her Sports social platforms to get the latest Women in Sports content. Thank you.